morning, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next probably hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes or so. We go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what's generally our Thursday meeting show. One of our Thursday meeting guests will join us here. That is Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Usually we have Ralph Michaels on the show, but he's traveling today, so he's unable to join us. But we'll get a pinch hitter and Alex Nicholas from Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. So we'll focus on Conference USA here. A couple big games for them on Friday night, and then some tilts coming up on Saturday as well. So we'll do a little bit of conference specialization stuff, dig in a little bit to that Group of Five league, see if we can uncover some betting angles, not just for this weekend, but also in subsequent weekends here as we keep going through the college football regular season. Before I bring Brad on, a couple things I want to mention. Over at bangthebook.com, we've got our usual daily stuff, my picks analysis piece for the MLB up with the Cubs-Dodgers look. Our updated NFL Week 7 power ratings from Danny Vorgs have been posted, and to be completely honest with you, it is the best one that he's posted here so far this year. Some really good updates in there, some very interesting lines according to his numbers, so check that out over there at bangthebook.com. We've got all NBA and NHL game previews up as well. It's just tons of stuff going on over there. Please make sure that you head over there, check out everything that we have to offer, including our contests, including our sportsbook reviews, including that matchup data section that I mentioned on yesterday's show. Just tons of stuff. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. This and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over at DSI using the promo code BTB and the number 25, $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook if you do decide to deposit over there. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well if you opt to play blackjack or craps or any of the other card games that they have over there at DSI Sportsbook. So a really good offer from them. Again, shopping around, so very important with all the sports markets that are going on here. You already know that. I don't have to tell you that. I do it anyway, but all of our handicappers on the show will echo the same thing. So if you need additional outs, give DSI Sportsbook a try. All right, two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. How are you doing on this fine, lovely Thursday morning?
I'm doing pretty well, man. I'm really excited about this college football card that we got coming up here this weekend. Some really interesting betting angles, and this is my favorite part of being in this industry. I mean, outside, of course, of cashing winning tickets, but you know, looking at the odds screen, breaking down all these games, looking at some of the situational angles, revenge, letdowns, motivation for the rest of the season, if teams need to win out for bowls or whatever else. It seems like this week, more so than the other weeks, we've got a lot of those situational type angles here.
Yeah, and you almost got to start with situational angles more this time of year because, let's face it, you know, the power ratings, at least I saw this week, I thought the numbers were really tight compared to my power ratings being off, you know, more than a couple of points off of what the line is. In fact, I think I only had two or three games this week that was the case. So that's why you got to go in a little bit more of your forte as far as breaking down games. And a good thing, once you get into conference, break down games, you know, not only situationally, but also, you know, there might be some series history where a team just has a significant advantage, whether it be motivation or whether it be schematically, they're just a bad matchup for a certain opponent. So you start diving into the other factors of a handicap, not just a pure power rating number.
Well, we talked about some of the really big games here earlier this week with Sports Cheeto, and we've tried to touch on a wide variety of games here throughout this week, and we try to do that each and every week here on the show. So let's go ahead and start in the Group of Five for this week, Brad. Let's go to game 321, 322 on the board. And again, sort your odds screen by rotation number if you want to follow along and see, you know, what the lines are here for the games as we're talking about them. But SMU take on Cincinnati. We haven't talked a ton about SMU or Cincinnati here on the show. In fact, I think we barely have, with the exception of that Cincinnati-Michigan game several weeks ago. SMU is a program going in a positive direction. It's not a big surprise with Chad Morris. You know, we would expect that they would start to figure this thing out offensively. Defensively, it's still a work in progress, but they've got an interesting game here on the road against Cincinnati. You know, for SMU this year, they've beaten teams that they should. They've lost to teams that they should probably lose to based on what the numbers have been saying. What do you think of this Mustangs team right now?
Yeah, I think they're definitely heading in the right direction. You already mentioned as a program, I think they're going to get to a bowl game this year, and they're really kind of a misleading final where they had multiple opportunities to score late against Houston. If they just put another score on the board, this is a team that could be 6-0 against the number, one of the hottest ATS teams in the country. They're still 5-1 against the number. That they've exceeded expectations as far as I'm concerned in that department. Obviously, offensively, they've always had it going on under Morris. They've slightly improved on the defensive side of the ball. They're coming off a bye here, so I think they're in a good spot. I like teams that get that bye at that halfway point. So I think they're set up, at least on paper, to make a heck of a run here. And maybe not necessarily for the conference championship, but definitely to get to their first bowl bid here in several-year period. They've been obviously they were down at the end of the June Jones tenure, and it's taken Chad Morris a couple of years to get this thing built. Now, I think the more intriguing thing is, Cincinnati's really struggling on the other side. Luke Fickell, you look at their only wins against Austin Peay and Miami, Ohio, and they were outgained against Austin Peay, and the Miami of Ohio game was a fluke win where they get a pick six with about a minute left to win that game. And they're very fortunate. They played a good game against Michigan, but outside of that, it's not been a good look. Lost by 30 last week. Their quarterback, Moore, suffered an elbow injury. He's a little bit banged up. I got to think with SMU coming off a bye, I think they're a little bit of the fresher team here. I'd be more inclined to lay it with the Ponies.
And the Mustangs here laying 7.5 on the road. They laid 10 at North Texas last year in a big double-digit road favorite role and won that game 34-21. So this isn't necessarily uncharted territory for the Mustangs, at least in terms of recent history. But still, seeing this team as more than a touchdown favorite on the road against anybody, it was pretty surprising here. I mean, it's been a few years since they've been a really quality program. And, I thought that it was a good time to talk about SMU as well, because they get this Cincinnati game, which obviously very winnable on the road, being favored by 7.5. Tulsa is a team that, week to week, you really don't know what you're going to get from Tulsa. Then they've got Central Florida at Navy, at Memphis, and then Tulane to wrap this thing up. I mean, if you're SMU and you want to get to a bowl game, and obviously they do, they haven't been to one since 2012, you got to have this one. So is that a little bit of an extra motivating factor here in your mind with the schedule that they have at the back end?
Oh, absolutely. These next 2 weeks have got to be wins, because they'll most likely be an underdog considerably, Central Florida, Navy, Memphis, depending on what Tulane is, because you don't know what you're going to get with them as well. But they might be a slight favorite there, but yeah, they cannot drop this one and can definitely think that a bowl bid is there for the taking. So I like the spot here. Now, power ratings wise, you're right. I don't quite have them, up to that 7.5 point range here. I think the number probably should be 6.5 or 7, but the fact that situationally, and I think motivationally, I kind of like them in this spot. And plus, what are you going to get from Cincinnati, especially if their quarterback isn't completely healthy there? It's an offense that's already been struggling a little bit. And to me, it's also more of a play against the Bearcats.
All right, let me ask you this then, and then we'll move on from this game. As you mentioned, situationally, the spot lines up pretty well for SMU. Your power ratings don't have it that way. Maybe this is a game that you do still entertain, and if the number does happen to come down to 7 for whatever reason, from the numbers guys who, like you, probably don't have it north of a touchdown. This late in the year, is that something you find yourself doing a lot more? You may not have a game that your power ratings align with, but you play it anyway?
Oh, absolutely, this time of year. Because, look, power ratings aren't going to be too far off, with a half point, a point on most games, so what you are is, like I said at the top, you got to start looking at different avenues as far as trying to find your ultimate edge as far as the game goes. Now, is this one going to be a bet for me? No, I'm not going to, pull off the rubber band here and put some money on this one unless SMU goes down to 6.5, and I just don't see it. Public's on SMU in this particular case, and I don't see enough sharp action trying to line up and want to bet Cincinnati here. But, yeah, look, as far as I'm concerned, power ratings, you probably got an issue with your own personal power rating if you're finding a lot of games that are, more than 3 points off at this time of year. But I'm not necessarily afraid to go against the power rating number. That's really never the case for me. And if it is off and I'm going against it, I better have a really good reason. And I think in this case, with Cincinnati playing an eighth straight week, SMU coming off a bye, and what I perceive to be motivated and a banged-up quarterback for Cincinnati, that's enough for me to overcome that power ratings difference.
All right, let's slide to the ACC here. Game 351-352, Wake Forest takes on Georgia Tech. This has been a really notable mover here throughout the week so far. Wake Forest opened an 8.5-point dog at Bookmaker, all the way down to 6 now. And again, when we talk about moves, 2.5-point moves are not all created equal. One that goes through 7 down to 6 is a very notable move. We've got a 6.5 out there at the Greek, but we do have a 5.5 out at Heritage. So looks like at this point, Wake Forest still the preferred side, and we haven't seen a whole lot come back on the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are playing, you know, on the fact that they had an extra week to prepare for the option. They're off a bye. They've looked pretty good on the defensive side of the ball so far this year, held Clemson in check for the most part, held Florida State in check. They've been a relatively profitable underdog here the last couple of years, and it's tough to lay too much against a relatively solid defense. Definitely that is the pro side of things. There's no doubt about it because, you know, on the flip side, Georgia Tech's actually a team that remains unbeaten as far as against the spread goes. They're 5-0 against the spread. And they're pretty much a couple of fluke plays away, a chip shot missed field goal against Tennessee in the opener on a Monday night, and then obviously Miami converting a miracle 4th-and-10 pass. I mean, not only would they be 5-0 against the spread, but they could be 5-0 straight up here. So I'll be honest with you, not surprised about the early money on Wake Forest. I know a lot of pros and a lot of guys that you might even have on this show on a weekly basis are definitely in the Wake Forest camp. But at the current 6 number, I think Georgia Tech's pretty darn good, and I don't know if they're getting enough respect here. To me, it comes down, are they going to let that, you know, disappointment at the end of the Miami game, is that going to carry over here this week? If I get that, you know, if I had an answer to that question, whether it be yes or no, I would jump in. If it's not going to carry over for them, I'm going to bet Georgia Tech -6. And there's a little bit of a hangover. They're feeling sorry about themselves. They let another game slip through their fingers. Then definitely Wake Forest should be the preferred side here. Since I don't have a real good grasp of how they're going to react, this is one where I probably don't get involved at the current number unless it moves again. And this one's just in-game live running for me.
Well, and I think, too, you kind of have a little bit of a situation here where the total for this game came out in the 47.5 range. It's actually gone up a little bit to 48, which is kind of interesting. We've got a team with 2 weeks to prep for the option. You generally don't see a reverse line move like that. I don't know. Maybe do you think that's something about John Wolford being back for Wake Forest that, you know, maybe they're expecting the offense to do a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, he's a better thrower than Hinton. Hinton's a better runner. Yeah, I would say since he missed the previous game, there's some with that, but he's not a quarterback that, you know, I go around the country and say, hey, this guy's worth, you know, 4 points the line. He's not even in that department as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's been banged up the last couple of years. They're allowed to do a little bit more on the offensive side of the ball. The playbook's opened up a little bit more, but I don't know if it was enough to cross right through a very key number of 7. I got them getting bet down to 7, but crossing right through that, I mean, pure power ratings for me say right now Georgia Tech, my numbers have that a little bit north of a touchdown. I could see that being part of the line move, but I think it's more to have to do with the fact that they got an extra week to prep for the option, and I think a lot of handicappers and pro bettors out there are also thinking Georgia Tech's going to be a little flat after last week.
The 3:30 slate here on Saturday is very interesting. You've got Alabama probably hammering the last nail into Butch Jones's coffin there against Tennessee. Syracuse and Miami, both teams in kind of letdown spots there in that one. Indiana and Michigan State, you know, Sparty's a team that's been kind of gaining a little bit of traction. Arizona State and Utah is a very interesting game in its own right as well. But as far as I'm concerned, if you want to watch a 3:30 game, CBS Sports Network is the place to be. As Central Florida takes on Navy, Navy's more than a touchdown dog at home here against Central Florida. Are you stunned by this line?
No, I actually like Central Florida, even though my power ratings don't agree with it. But I like the spot here for Central Florida. I think they're perfectly able to defend the option. Number one, that, you know, reading through their stuff, they started prepping for the option this spring. And I know a lot of teams do it, but I think they take it very seriously. Number two factor, that they were supposed to play an option team earlier this year in Georgia Tech. Had a couple of practices before that game was actually canceled, so they were already prepping for the option. And they also have a head coach who should have them relatively prepped for the option in Scott Frost. In fact, he's actually been the scout team quarterback for them running the option, giving them a good look in practice. I'm not too surprised because Central Florida, I haven't been able until really this week to get a good solid power rating on them. I've upgraded them more than any other team in the country. Now, they haven't necessarily played a really tough slate of opponents, especially in the last couple of weeks against Cincinnati and East Carolina, but I think you get a little bit of slight value that Cincinnati game was, you know, postponed or, you know, taken off the board with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They might have put 70 on the Bearcats in that one. And Navy, I think, you know, they are off a 5-turnover game last week. I'll make a little bit of a case here for Navy. So you don't expect them to have, you know, a big turnover game. They'll protect the football this week. But I'm also worried about them as far as the stamina. I mean, they were in a very highly competitive to the wire game against Air Force, highly competitive game against Memphis last week. You know, how much juice does this team have left? I just think Central Florida is going to be prepped for the option. I actually like, and I know you're probably going to be on the opposite side in this one, I like Central Florida to win and cover that one and win the game by double digits.
It's a really hard spot for me. My number is Central Florida -5. So from a power rating standpoint, if I can get 7.5, obviously there's some value there in doing that. But I have a hard time going against Central Florida. I mean, I've elevated them 2 touchdowns in my power ratings already this year. And clearly with this number going up to 7.5, I'm still not high enough. I should have gone a little bit more on them. But it's really hard for me because I'm always high on Navy. You know, it almost doesn't seem to matter who comes back, who they lose. Kenny Amatalolo and Ivan Jasper are just so damn good with this team. And Service Academy team, it's always discipline. You know, maybe they don't have the athleticism of other teams, but they don't hurt themselves. Last week, they hurt themselves. 5 turnovers, they don't do that. You know, this isn't a team that takes a lot of penalties. This isn't a team that turns the football over a lot. So I just think that there has to be some pretty quick regression to the mean for a team like Navy here. The problem is, I don't know if I want to stand in front of Central Florida because, I mean, they're just bludgeoning opponents right now. And Scott Frost is doing an incredible job. So it's hard. I mean, you know, numbers tell me to take Navy. Heart tells me to take UCF. At that point, it is probably better to just stay off.
Yeah, I would say that. And you know, I'll give one more factor for Navy. You know, as a home underdog, they've been very good, 4-0 here recently. All 4 outright upsets, including a big one over Houston last year. But it's not like Central Florida's in a flat spot at all. And you know, I was watching a couple press conferences with Scott Frost this week, and he said actually them not playing a game for about a 3-week period actually has them pretty fresh compared to the rest of the college football teams here that, you know, after, and keep in mind, you know, they only played a game, but you got to go back. They started the fall camps a week early this year at the end of July. So you have a 4 or 5 week fall camp and then you have your games. He thought, you know, the reason they've been a little fresh at the start of the season is that factor that they had a couple games postponed and canceled because of the hurricanes. And you've seen some fresh legs coming out of them here recently. So I thought that was a little bit of an intriguing factor. They have a bye on deck, so they can actually, you know, with the reschedule, they don't have a bye.
They're playing Austin Peay. It's a bye.
Yeah, fair enough. So, you know, with that, maybe I worry a little bit about them at the end of the season because they're going to have to play like 10 games in a row. But man, right now, they haven't really been challenged. So I don't think they've extended a lot of effort. And, you know, I can't go against them. You said you upgraded them by 2 touchdowns. That's exactly what I've upgraded them. And I'm still not there yet because my pure power rating says this game should be 6.5. But I don't know if my power rating still quite have a handle on this team. And I got them power rating the top 25 in the country. And that's saying something because I'm not a lot of group of five teams get into my top 25. I don't care what an AP poll has, you know, a certain team. We'll see. A very intriguing game. And I agree with your overall emphasis at the top that this is probably is the most intriguing as far as a handicapping perspective goes of all the 3:30 games.
I mean, I got Central Florida 22nd in my power ratings, so I'm right there with you in terms of having this team, you know, up there in the top 25, and they deserve to be, and they've done nothing to this point that would make me stop elevating them in my power ratings. And even this week, even if they lose this game and this thing closes 7.5, I've still got to bump UCF up a little bit more just to make sure that I'm, you know, right there with the close and kind of trying to mirror the market a little bit. And I mean, hey, there's no stop sign in sight for this team. And you just need to respect that and understand that, you know, if you're going against them and you have a valid reason to do it, just know that you're going against a train that hasn't been stopped yet. And who knows, maybe this will be the week. I mean, if anybody can do it, it probably is a team with the discipline of Navy. The concern that I have and the concern that I always have, you know, when Navy's in a spot like this is how do they line up athletically? Because we're seeing the talent that's in the Sunshine State and how Scott Frost has been able to maximize it.
Yeah, and how do they line it? Look, Navy's going to move the football on anyone, but how do they match up on the other side of the ball? I mean, they're going to be able to slow down, and probably the best way to slow down UCF is to, you know, obviously grind out the clock on the other side. I just think Central Florida's got that rare instance where they have a head coach that lived, breathed option football probably his entire youth and all the way through his college days there at being a Nebraska quarterback. I think he's got a pretty good sense on how to defend the option since he lived it for so many years. If their defense is getting a couple spots against Navy, I'm not necessarily sure I can trust Navy's defense to get a couple of spots against a machine on the other side of the ball in Central Florida.
No, I think it's an excellent point. And when you take an 0-12 team and take them to a bowl game and then do what you've done to this point, everybody in that program listens to Scott Frost. So it's not like these guys in the film room are just going to be, you know, dicking around or whatever else. They're going to be paying attention. They're going to make sure that they're ready to defend that option. And that's really what matters the most about the option. That's why teams like Navy and other service academies have so much success with it, is that the opposition just has a lack of focus. I mean, you have to have so much gap responsibility when you try to defend this scheme. And I think Frost is the kind of guy that can get through to the team and get them to understand, you know, what their responsibilities are against this offense. And, you know, I mean, I tell you what, it would not surprise me if Central Florida finds a way to win this game very comfortably. And that's part of the reason why, you know, I'm not going to go with my numbers here and take Navy.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Now, I'm on a Central Florida side, and I wouldn't be stunned if, like you said, that they easily won the game by 3 touchdowns. But I also think it has the ability to be a very high-variance game where I would not be – even though I like Central Florida a lot, bet Central Florida at the start of the week before the line crossed over a touchdown, I would not be absolutely stunned if Navy won the game outright. So I will say that. It is a little bit more of a higher-variance game than what I normally am betting. I've been a little short on Central Florida, and to me, maybe I'm a little late to the party here backing them. But right now, I haven't seen anyone that's really come close to them as far, and their numbers just can't get high enough. So that, one of the reasons I bet that game early is I expected the money to come in on Central Florida throughout the course of the week.
But at least you're at the party. You're not outside on Cop Watch or something like that. You've actually made it to the party now, so that's good. All right, let's go to a noon kickoff here in the Big 12 game, 391-392. Oklahoma State takes on Texas. Oklahoma State now a touchdown favorite, number open 6. It's gone up a little bit to 7. And, you know, this is a game where I'm kind of disappointed it starts at noon because I don't know what kind of start we get from both of these teams. Because I think if this was a game played in primetime or maybe played in the middle of the afternoon, it would definitely be, you know, must-see appointment television. Still could be at noon, but, you know, what do you think that start time means for this game?
Could be a little bit of a sluggish start for both teams, and maybe even Texas off the big game last week against Oklahoma. And that's probably my biggest question here. If you watched that Texas-Oklahoma game last week, you know, both of those teams were absolutely gassed at the end of that game. I mean, it was played 90 degrees in early afternoon in the Texas humidity. It was a back-and-forth, ebb-and-flow game where, you know, Oklahoma looked like they were going to run away with it. Texas rallied and extended a lot of effort there. How much does Texas have left in the tank? Because if they're on E, the team I don't want to play this year in the country, if I'm on E, is Oklahoma State, because they'll make you pay for it. But if Texas does have a lot of energy, or at least some energy left, you know, pure power ratings say they're the play here. I've liked what I've seen from them from not only a defensive aspect, but I think after about a decade of wandering around in the wilderness, they finally found a quarterback. They haven't had one since Colt McCoy. Sam Ehlinger had over 100 yards rushing last week. He's, you know, getting better as a passer. That's a really good true freshman quarterback that they have there in Austin. On the flip side of things, Oklahoma State should be fresh. They're off a bye, and then last week, pummeled Baylor. They rack up a school record 747 yards. Again, if Texas doesn't have it all there from an energy aspect, Oklahoma's the play. But one other factor here, Tom Herman as an underdog, not only as a head coach, but take it back to his offensive coordinator days at Ohio State, 15-0 against the spread as an underdog, 11 outright upsets. That's enough for me to have a little bit of a lean, and we'll see if I could really – I'd love to catch a 7.5. I don't think I'm going to get it. But, yeah, I'm definitely in the Texas camp here. I lean with the horns plus the points.
747 yards for Oklahoma State in that game, and they only had the ball for 24 minutes and 21 seconds, which is just – I mean, they just had big play after big play. And that's an interesting one because – what do people think of Baylor at this point in the year? Do they think of the Baylor team that played so awful early on in the season? Do they think of the Baylor team that was starting to improve a little bit there with Matt Rhule? You know, they were playing more competitive football, and then all of a sudden they just get trucked. I mean, how much do people put into that Oklahoma State win? I think that's kind of interesting and, you know, something that we can consider a little bit here as we go throughout talking about this game. For Texas, I mean, like you said, this is a program that's just kind of been wandering aimlessly. They lost that game to Maryland at the beginning of the year, blew out San Jose State, close loss against USC, close win against Iowa State, and not the greatest of spots there heading up to Ames. You know, Texas has played a lot of emotional games here lately. Their last four games, you know, decided by 10 points or less. And like you said, I mean, now going into an 11 o'clock local time start, obviously it's 12 on the East Coast, but an 11 o'clock local time start, I don't know how much is there for this team. So I think maybe as opposed to, I guess let me say this. My thought was maybe you look at a first half line. Maybe you look for Oklahoma State to start early, go and blow this thing out. The problem is if it gets off the rails for Texas early on, do they just pack it in to where the full game looks pretty good too?
Yeah. For me, it's an in-game live bet. I mean, I could see that scenario, but I just want to see what kind of energy they have, you know, first couple drives of the game. If I'm not seeing it, it's all Oklahoma State, and maybe the line can't get high enough for me as far as the in-game live running there. I don't see them quitting, though, under a Tom Herman coach, so I guess I'd be less inclined to say that they would, as far as the second half and overall game. I would say – if you're looking at Oklahoma State and your number one factor is you expect Texas to be tired, I'd go ahead and lay the 7 right now because I don't know if you're going to get too much value during the game. I just don't have a strong enough power rating and a strong enough answer to the question as far as Texas's overall thing to go ahead and make a recommendation at this point in one way or the other. I'm just going with pure power rating to Texas the number, pure, you know, technical aspect. That Tom Herman in the underdog role has shown like he doesn't like to be disrespected too much. And a lot of teams haven't been able to get separation against them, especially after the Maryland game. To me, that's going to be an outlier. That's a first game for a head coach. I don't know if you can take too much into that. I would prefer to see what I've seen from Texas the last five games. And what I've seen is a pretty doggone good defense from not only a talent aspect, but I also think the schemes that Texas is running are among the top 20, 25 in the country. So it's tough for me to a team that I like on the defensive side of the ball getting more than a touchdown at home.
No, I mean, I didn't mean to insinuate that they would quit because there's a negative connotation involved with that. It's just a matter of I just don't know how much is left in the tank. And at that point, I mean, yeah, it may look like a lack of effort. It may look like quitting. It may not be, you know, the nicest perception on television, but I don't think that it would be, you know, this team punting this game away or quitting on the coach or anything like that. I think it would just be a fact that, I mean, you know, these kids get tired. I mean, it just is what it is. They played those emotional games, like I said, very emotional rivalry game last week. Tom Herman said as much. He said, you know, that game hurts, and it should hurt. Well, you know, we'll see how they respond here with a chance to knock off what amounts to a top 10 team at home. One more game breakdown here I want to touch on. Fresno State takes on San Diego State. This has been a very significant line mover. San Diego State opened an 11.5-point favorite at bookmaker, now down to 7.5. I mean, Fresno State is a team that, you know, if you haven't been paying attention, their perception has been rising very, very quickly out there in the betting market. What do you make of this game? I mean, I know San Diego State's coming off of a loss, and maybe that has something to do with the line move here. I don't know. This number looks short now.
I think it does. But, you know, I went up against Fresno State last week. Look, great bet. I took New Mexico plus 2.5. Hell, New Mexico closes a 2.5-point favorite. So I was ahead of a 5-point line move. Didn't make a difference. You know, 38-0. I mean, Fresno State's 5-0-1 against the number. Jeff Tepford, I thought coming in was a really good hire. I thought it was a good spot for him. Keep in mind that's his alma mater as well, so he takes things a little bit more personally than maybe other guys that are coming from a Power 5 level head coaching job and dropping down to the Group of 5. McMarion, I think the Oregon State transfer is something that a lot of people didn't capture prior to the season. That was late, very late in the process, like fall camp that he came over. And I think as they move along towards the rest of the season, he's only going to get better as he gets used to the schemes. He's very late in the process there, and I don't think the market's accounted for that. But it's crazy to me because you had a 5-point line move against Fresno State last week, and yet right back here, you know, this week, all the money is coming in on them. Now, a lot of guys like myself took it on the chin last week going up against them. And the money was also against San Diego State last week. But I got to be honest with you, pure power ratings for me, even though I've upgraded Fresno State significantly by about a touchdown so far this year, and I've liked them in a few games, I can't get this one. I can't even get this one to 10, to be honest with you. This is the biggest discrepancy that I have in a pure power rating of any game this week. San Diego State should be laying double digits. Now, why am I not, you know, inclined to be running to the window multiple times and bet San Diego State minus 7.5? Was that a dream crusher for them last week against Boise State? I mean, they're sitting there undefeated, and they get, you know, obviously a couple of touchdowns go against them early, a fumble return and a punt return. They're down 14-0, and Boise State hasn't even gotten a first down in the game yet. And how much do they have left in the tank? Because you talk about teams, you know, playing a bunch of close emotional games. They've been involved in quite a few. I mean, even going back to the early start of the season where they're pulling an upset against Arizona State, one against Stanford. They had a very close game against Air Force. Now, you know, I'm worried about how much San Diego State has left in the tank and whether or not, you know, they're going to be feeling sorry about themselves after what happened to them at home last week against Boise.
And that is a huge thing. I mean, you know, this is a team. They probably weren't going to get the New Year's Six spot anyway, because that's probably going to go to the winner of that Central Florida-South Florida game later on in the year. But, you know, I mean, San Diego State had the resume. You know, they beat an Arizona State team that just beat Washington. They've beaten a Stanford team. So they had it. They had everything that they needed to get. And then they lose that game last week, and it's like, okay, now what? You know, I mean, obviously the thing for them now is going to be looking to win the Mountain West and get to a decent bowl game somewhere out there in the Western United States. But that really wasn't the goal. Once you beat Stanford, your goals change. And for San Diego State here, you know, who knows now what type of effort we get from, I mean, we should get a good effort. Rocky Long is a very good head coach, but are they motivated enough to go out here and win this game comfortably? Obviously the betting market doesn't think so, and certainly didn't expect them to win it by double digits. So, very interesting game there to be sure. Like you, mine was much higher. I think I actually have this number over 2 touchdowns. Maybe I'm just too slow to adjust Fresno State, and clearly that is the case here. But, you know, I mean, I need to see it from Fresno State, too, against a really good team. I mean, that's something else that you can kind of look at here as an angle here at this point in the season is, you know, Fresno State has played well in their 2 losses against top 10 teams, and they played really well against some bad teams here over their last 3 games. San Diego State is a step up in class for them. I need to see it. I need it to proven to me that they're as good as the market would seem to suggest here. And, hey, if this is a spot that they do it, good for them. But, I mean, I'll be on San Diego State this week.
Yeah, I think that's correct. And keep in mind, yeah, they've covered against Washington and Alabama, but how motivated were Washington and Alabama in that game? I don't know if we got even B efforts out of those 2 schools in that one against Fresno State. And that's why I liked going against Fresno State last week. I perceived New Mexico to be at least quality. New Mexico is coming off a bye. They're coming off wins against Tulsa and Air Force. And I thought the bye sign was for the Lobos. And again, I didn't know how to you know, really evaluate Fresno State accordingly. You play a couple of top 10 teams, and then you're playing, you know, an FCS school and two of the worst teams in the Mountain West in San Jose State and Nevada. I got a little bit of a better grasp for what they're about by that big blowout win over New Mexico, but you're exactly right. How are they going to fare against a top upper echelon team in the Mountain West? And I'll be honest with you, San Diego State's mad, or a little, they take it to heart a little bit, and they're a little angry, which could be the case, because you're right, Rocky Long's a longtime, you know, veteran head coach, and if they come out with an attitude, then this might be one of the easiest bets you make all year. I will be betting San Diego State. I you talk about power ratings, I got the number 13. I mean, at this point of the season, once every maybe 3 weeks, do I have a power rating that's off like 5 or 6 points? Yeah, I'll talk. I was waiting to get 7 since the market was so against San Diego State here. I'll probably wait till later in the week. But, yeah, I'll be in the San Diego State camp right along with you. Win or lose, Adam, I'll be with you.
Do you happen to have another exclusive free pick for our show listeners on this week's card?
Yeah, I will say, you know, come out and be honest, that Central Florida is a premium pick for me this week. But let's go ahead and let's go to the MAC conference, one of my favorite conferences. I actually like Eastern Michigan getting 3 at home. I know Western Michigan's off a misleading game that they absolutely should have won against Akron, but I'm wondering how much they have left in the tank. 2 weeks ago, they play a 7 overtime game with Buffalo. Then they have 1 day less prep for this particular game because the Akron game was postponed due to weather. You know, Eastern Michigan's come off a 3-game road stretch. They lost all 3 straight up, but they took home the cash in all 3 of them. All 3 losses came to teams that played in bowl games. All 3 games went right down to the wire. I think it's a pretty good team. Maybe the record doesn't reflect it. I think you continue to catch value. A program that was among the worst, if not the worst, at all of FBS, I think in the last 20 games has made major strides. 16-4 against the spread their last 20 games. And I still think with those straight-up losses, they're not getting the due respect. It's a big rivalry game. They have the better defense, in my opinion. They're getting points at home. Give me Eastern Michigan plus the 3. They went outright.
I like it. I like that one a lot, actually. That's a game that I definitely have circled here, and I should have grabbed it at 3.5 or 4. It looks like some of the 3s may be going away here at some point, or at least down to plus 3, minus 20, or minus 25. So one for our listeners to jump in on here very quickly. All right, let's chat a couple of minutes about the NFL here, and let's talk about this Bengals-Steelers game. This one, game 455, 456, about a 425 start time here. So a late kickoff at Heinz Field. We generally don't see that. Pittsburgh, 5-point favorite, couple 5.5s out there. Cincinnati off a bye, Pittsburgh off a huge win. Interesting spot for both of these teams.
Yeah, no doubt. And what Pittsburgh team are you going to get here? That's the question. Did the bye sign finally go on for them last week with the outright upset over Kansas City? I liked them last week. If you've been following Steelers football for the last 15 years, that was a spot to play on them. Although I was worried. I mean, you worried about the temperature of the locker room. They've had some issues. Worry about Big Ben at maybe the tail end of his career. Does he have it, or does he, you know, as far as, you know, mentally have it? Because, I mean, there's been talk the last couple of years that, you know, he wants to retire after a particular season. On the flip side, I thought the bye sign came on for Cincinnati when they made the offensive coordinator change. They covered 3. They probably should have won 3 straight, should have won in Lambeau there a few weeks back against the Packers. Boy, it's tough to get a read on Pittsburgh. I mean, if they're motivated, and keep in mind they've owned the series over the Bengals, I think they've won and covered 6 of the last 7, then to me they seem to be the play here. If they're not giving an A effort, and Cincinnati fresh off a bye playing confidently, I wouldn't be stunned that Cincinnati not only covers but wins the game outright. It's a high variance game for me. I think I'm going to more blindly play the under in this one. You look at Pittsburgh games, all of them have gone under the total. It's a short number at 40.5, but you know, Cincinnati getting a couple of key defensive players back. I think a black and blue type of game, typical of the AFC North between the Cincinnati, you know, the Pittsburghs, the Baltimores of the world. I'm going to lean under 40.5 more than anything. I don't know if I can trust Pittsburgh, whether I'm going to get C Pittsburgh effort or A Pittsburgh effort.
What's really interesting about this line to me is that when you follow the AFC North, I mean, you look at these Cincinnati versus Pittsburgh, Cincinnati versus Baltimore, Baltimore versus Pittsburgh games. It's like the number's almost 3 by default, and occasionally you get one that goes to 3.5. Sometimes you get the rare 4. You rarely see anything higher than 4 when those 3 teams are wind up playing against each other, and we had a 6 open for this one. And I don't know. To me, that screams overreaction to what Pittsburgh did last week with almost everybody being on them. They were their highest consensus play in the traditional Super Contest and the Super Contest Gold. Number wound up coming down throughout the week in the actual betting market. So that felt like an overreaction line to me. And I still think it's maybe a little bit of an overreaction line. I'd probably put it somewhere around 4.5. So it's not like you're getting a key number or anything with 5. But I don't know. It, just given the history between these two teams and these three teams at the top of the North Division, always physical, always close, generally low scoring types of games. From, you know, I mean, when you just think about it that way, anecdotally, it looks like Cincinnati has line value.
Yeah. You breaking it down right there. And again, I don't know how much I'm going to get involved on this one. You know, just from a pure past experience level, I think since it, to me, it's the dog or nothing. It's the under or nothing, just for how these games have played out. I just, you know, Cincinnati, you know, against Pittsburgh particularly, just I don't know if I can trust them if the game's close to make a play. Now, obviously, we're dealing with more than a field goal here, so maybe it doesn't come down to that. But, boy, if you got a tie ball game and you know, Pittsburgh, I just don't know if I can trust Cincinnati to keep that maybe final touchdown, final field goal, whatever it is, off the board. It's just going to be – I don't expect it to be, you know, as far as, you know, the variance goes, I could see it with Cincinnati winning outright or Pittsburgh winning by 7. But I think overall, if you're expecting a team to win by double digits in this one, it's just not going to happen in this one. And that's even on the Pittsburgh side. I'll see. I mean, look, they've been struggling with the running game. Bell finally had 179 yards, but obviously he can't be carrying the football, you know, 30 times every single game for the whole season. One thing that I can trust in this one, man, Pittsburgh's defense has been a lot better than expected. They're starting to get back close to the level that they were 5, 6, 7 years ago when they were relying more on the defense to get them as far as at the top of the AFC. That hasn't been the case the last 5, 6, 7 years, but they've at least shown up each and every week. It's been the Pittsburgh offense that has been struggling.
One more game to touch on here with you, Brad, for this week in the NFL. And excuse me, I'm going to hold off on my thoughts on this one because I think this game is going to be on my Super Contest card, and I don't want to let the cat out of the bag here on the Thursday show. Atlanta and New England, Super Bowl rematch. This is going to be easily the most bet game of the weekend. Massive handle, primetime game, Sunday night football game, two very well-known teams. Atlanta opened 4.5. The market pounced immediately. It's down to -3 now, New England, with some extra juice. You got a -17 out there, -22, -20, that type of thing. I mean, look, there's a lot going on with this game for sure.
Yeah, and let me just remind everyone out there, Atlanta blew a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. That's kind of a Twitter type of joke. But looking at the matchup, yeah, it's tough to lay points with the New England defense that I think continues to struggle. Look, the results the last couple of weeks say, hey, they're really improving. Well, Tampa Bay missed 3 field goals. Should have been a touchdown at the end of the Jets game. I still got some issues on that side of the ball. You look at Atlanta, should be super motivated, trying to avenge that Super Bowl game there. I thought they started to look ahead of the game when they blew the 17-0 lead at home to Miami last week. That probably gives you a little bit of line value there. You know, the money just came in on the total, and I was ready to pounce, and I should have pounced a little bit earlier. Didn't understand that the lower number. Keep in mind, you know, the Super Bowl, I think the total closed around 58.5, 59-ish. What's changed? You know, obviously you're playing in a little bit possibly better conditions, you know, in the Super Bowl last year compared to this one. But what's changed that the total would have opened like 53.5 in some spots, at least at bookmaker it did. I mean, New England last year had the number one scoring defense, and now they have arguably one of the worst defenses in the NFL. I didn't understand the opening total. Points will be plenty here. If you can, it's tough because them 3.5s are starting to disappear. I'd have been on the Atlanta side plus the 3.5. If it's 3, I think it's the correct number. With the total climbing, it's starting to get to be the correct number. I'm probably going to sit this one out. I mean, I put out a weekly newsletter, and I had New England 30-27. So it's getting real tight up against my personal numbers here.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, we talk about it each and every week. It is the weekly newsletter. It's called the Powers Picks Newsletter. Game write-up on every single college football game each and every week. It doesn't matter if it's Alabama or South Alabama. You get a game write-up, score projection, you name it, and much more, as long as top picks of the week. We also cover the NFL as well, along with top picks of the week. Plus, we have betting angles in there. We have recap, you know, misleading finals, bad beats, all that, major injuries throughout the course of that. We have computer projected lines, power ratings on all 130 college football teams' records. You get it emailed to you each and every week. Now through Super Bowl, $79 is the price. BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, thank you so much, brother. Always a treat. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Really good stuff there from Brad Powers at BradPowersSports.com. And again, I didn't want to let the cat out of the bag with what I'm looking at for the Super Contest with that Sunday night football game. You'll be able to hear that on tomorrow's show with Sports Cheetah. Whether or not I use that game, we'll still be sure to touch on that one and talk about it, because there is a lot to talk about with that matchup. One more segment here for this Thursday edition of the show. We'll bring on a familiar voice that we haven't heard from in a while. That is Alex Nicholas from Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Alex, how's it going today, man?
Not bad, Adam. Not bad. Thanks for having me, man.
I appreciate it. Good to get you back on the show here. And I figure it's a pretty good week to do it, because Conference USA gets a little bit of a share of the spotlight here this week with a couple of games coming up on Friday night. We'll go ahead and dive right on into those here. Game 307, 308 on the rotation board. Western Kentucky takes on Old Dominion. Hilltoppers anywhere from a 9.5 to a 10.5-point favorite. Most of the market showing 10. But, Alex, this isn't the Western Kentucky team that we saw under the Jeff Brohm era.
No, it isn't. It's totally different. I mean, you go from spread, air raid, you know, having talent receivers everywhere, to kind of this spread, inverted veer type of control the ground, you know, control the line of scrimmage, control the football offense, which I was able to see a couple weeks ago from Western Kentucky. And it's totally different. You know, it really is. And, you know, this game against Old Dominion is going to be a true test, in my opinion, to see how far Western Kentucky has come along ever since really their loss against Louisiana Tech back in mid-September. You know, you play a Ball State team that's kind of, I guess you could say, a middle-of-the-pack team, you know, in the MAC, and then you play two of the worst teams in Conference USA in UTEP, which you struggle on the road, and then you come back and then you thrash Charlotte last week. My big concern this week of Western Kentucky is how can they get Mike White going to being able to become a factor again. Mike White's kind of been a non-factor after he was probably most arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the group of five last season. So for me, it's going to be about how well has Western Kentucky really come along over the past 2 to 3 weeks after it looked like, you know, when they played UTEP, it looks like this team could probably struggle offensively, but they got it together and realized that they should have against Charlotte. Now against another struggling team against Old Dominion, you know, the S&P projections have them as 12.5-point favorites here. So I kind of lean with that. I think Western Kentucky finally is able to kind of get right before they have, you know, before they host Florida Atlantic in a couple of weeks. But that game's going to be tough. You know, it's going to be tough on the road because Old Dominion does have a great home field advantage. And I think that could be kind of a close game, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Western Kentucky win by 2 scores and being able to kind of get their run game going as they did last week.
You know, one of the things that you and I have talked about in Conference USA, both on the football side and on the basketball side, is that there are some really challenging travel spots in this conference. It is very, very spread out. For Western Kentucky here, they got to go all the way out to Norfolk, which, you know, obviously is a place that they go, you know, once every couple of years. And it can be a real challenge to do that. Now, on the Old Dominion side here, I mean, this poor team, they have been ravaged by injuries this season. They lose Ray Lowry, who's the all-time leading rusher in program history, and it's not even close either. And he still has eligibility left. That's how good he's been for this Monarchs program. And they lose Jonathan Duhart, their top wide receiver for the season. They had a 17-year-old quarterback in Steven Williams starting games for them, I think, as of week 3 of the season, and he's still out there as a starter now. But they're starting to get healthier. Lowry's back, although he's not, you know, back to what he was with a hamstring injury. Bobby Wilder's a guy that really maximizes talent well. They made it to a bowl game last year, won in the Bahamas. It was a landmark season for the Monarchs. This is not a team that's going to quit, and they're starting to get a little bit healthier. So, do we see, you know, the ceiling rise a little bit for this team as they go forward?
And you said it, you hit it right on the head when you're talking about one of my favorite coaches in Conference USA, in Bobby Wilder. And that that formula could kind of come to fruition this week at home. You know, Lowry last week had kind of almost a Ray Lowry, like 19 carries for 84 yards, and I really like Jeremy Cox, and now you're starting to see Steven Williams. Even though, you know, you're looking at some of their passing numbers, you know, they're still 126 in passing S&P Plus and passing rate success. So you're seeing maybe with their help and with a guy like Ray Lowry, which really demands a lot of attention with what Old Dominion does, I think that could be kind of a perfect mix for an upset. And that's why I think this game could be very close than what the S&P projections are saying. And I think you add those two dimensions, and obviously you're not going to get Durhart back anytime soon, unfortunately. But, you know, that mix right there with what Bobby Wilder can do with his charisma and the way that he gets the most out of his teams at home on this one, a national televised game, like I mentioned, you know, Old Dominion shows up very well at their place. This could be kind of that quote-unquote, I don't even know if you want to call it a trap game, for Western Kentucky, as well as they've been playing the past couple of weeks in terms of just getting right. But you're right. I think that could play into a factor in this game in terms of Bobby Wilder getting not only his horses back, but the way that he can get the most out of his team. And they kind of have that underdog mentality. They should have that underdog mentality, because coming into the season, I was a lot higher than I was on Old Dominion than they actually are. And that's attributed to mainly to injuries. But that is going to be a very interesting factor, which could make this game a close one. And, I mean, heck, even if Old Dominion upsets it, you know where that's coming from. Bobby Wilder is a magician. He's shown it before. But can he do it, you know, with the team that's kind of been beaten up, in a sense, over the past couple of weeks injury-wise? That's going to be a big thing that to watch this week for sure.
All right, so we go from Norfolk, and that game's on CBS Sports Network Friday night, down to Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Middle Tennessee State hosts Marshall. Now, Marshall was a team in the betting markets prior to the season that got a lot of love from a season win total standpoint. A lot of people expecting a bounce back from Doc Holliday's program. Well, it's happened, because Marshall's 5-1 here on the year. They've given up 6 points the last 2 weeks, 21 points over their last 4 games. They're doing it with defense, which is kind of a surprise based on what we traditionally know about Marshall.
Yeah, it is. And you're looking at what Marshall hasn't done offensively, and you're looking at, you know, some of their numbers that are ranked on, you know, the 120s in some of my favorite advanced stats. You're looking at rushing success rate. You're looking at even their pass, you know, their passing success rate, even though it's in the mid-50s, but that's Marshall-like from when we've seen Marshall being able to dominate the previous, you know, 3 years before for the last 3 years when they had Rakeem Cato and, you know, Devin Johnson and all those studs on offense. And now you're seeing what they've been able to do defensively, and they just totally shut down Charlotte. They totally shut down Old Dominion, and they even gave Cincinnati some fits a couple weeks ago defensively. So the big question, though, in this game is the health of Brent Stockstill, and that's really going to kind of dictate, I think, how good Marshall could be defensively. Without Stockstill, I mean, this Marshall team could probably hold Middle Tennessee maybe to a third straight. We hold somebody to 3 points, but their defense, I mean, this is something that Doc Holliday, and I've talked about, maybe I've talked about it here, I've talked about it in a couple other places, about how well Doc Holliday has been able to recruit the defensive side of the ball, particularly their defensive backs and linebackers from the state of Florida, and now you really really seeing that come to fruition. I mean, they have the 12th best havoc rate out of all linebackers in FBS. And you're looking at their defensive havoc rate is 33rd. It's well above the national average at 7.8 is what you're seeing from this Marshall defense, and that is going to be tough for anybody to overcome, and particularly anybody in Conference USA, particularly in the East, where you're seeing maybe not that, you know, as Conference USA has been known as a passing league, now you're seeing kind of gaudy rushing numbers from teams out of the East, particularly FAU and Middle Tennessee. If Brent Stockstill plays, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be Marshall's really first test against a true team that can really spread out the ball and can really put points through the air, and that's going to be a big test for Marshall if Stockstill plays. But if not, I really think you'll see Marshall's defense continue to assert herself as a top unit, possibly in a whole group of five in terms of defensive production.
Unfortunately, Stockstill not going to go here this week. That was announced, I think, yesterday, that he's going to be unable to go with the collarbone. And at least they've got Richie James back, but Richie James last week just didn't look like himself. 7 catches, 47 yards. That's not who he is. That's not what he does. And part of that, of course, is the fact that Stockstill's not there at quarterback. So, you know, for Middle Tennessee State, I mean, it's been a struggle for Tony Frank. I love Middle Tennessee State's coordinators, Tony Franklin and Scott Schaefer. Scott Schaefer is doing a hell of a job with this Blue Raiders defense. So if you are looking for an angle on this game, maybe the under probably something you'd be looking at. But I will ask you this here, Alex. Middle Tennessee State is not the same offense without Stock still. We know that. We've already just discussed that. But for Marshall here, I mean, they play Kent State, who Kent State's one of the worst offensive teams in FBS. Cincinnati has got all sorts of problems. Luke Fickell doesn't know which end is up with that team right now. Charlotte's very bad. They haven't won a game. Old Dominion, we just talked about their injury problems. How good is this Marshall defense? I mean, we really haven't seen them get tested outside of that North Carolina State game.
And that's the big question. This is why I think this Friday game, if Brent Scott still was available, would really tell us a lot about it. And honestly, looking at kind of their schedule, I don't know if we'll find out that true answer until November 3rd when they travel to Lane Kiffin Land down there in Florida Atlantic. And you're right. I think the jury's still out. You know, in our Conference USA poll that we run, you know, they narrowly beat out North Texas for that number one spot. And I think North Texas right now seems to have kind of that complete team. But if we're talking about defense, you know, Marshall truly has not been tested. And you're looking at kind of their schedule, they really won't face a quote-unquote high-powered offensive team until the last game of the season against Southern Miss. So, you know, while they haven't been tested, you're looking at, you know, their last four wins have all been teams that are ranked, you know, no higher than 110 in the S&P Plus rating. So I think that is a legitimate question, a question that I think won't be tested out, like I mentioned, first until November 3rd against Florida Atlantic. But the talent is certainly there to being able to do that against these top 100 or bottom 100 teams, if you will, and to being able to, you know, only give up, you know, 29 points over the past 4 weeks and shutting out Kent State. I mean, that's still kind of impressive no matter, you know, who you're playing. But I, like you mentioned, that jury's still out, and a lot of people around Conference USA, a lot of people that I talk to are still kind of wondering how good is this Marshall defense when you match them against the Southern Miss, when you match them against a running attack like Fort Atlantic, and heck, even against, you know, teams like veteran quarterbacks like Western Kentucky has one, UTSA has one. That will be definitely tested here in the next couple of weeks. But it's kind of, I guess you could say, for us to really kind of look at that, it sucks though that we don't get to see that against a potentially really good offense with Middle Tennessee and their quarterback. So I still think it'll be a couple of weeks before we figure out how good and how consistent can this Marshall defense continue to play and continue to carry them on the top of the Conference USA East End Division.
Well, as somebody that follows Conference USA, Alex, you have to love game 323-324 here between North Texas and Florida Atlantic. The line movement on this game alone has been fascinating. Florida Atlantic opened a 6.5-point favorite at Bookmaker. Florida Atlantic is now a 3.5-point favorite at Bookmaker. And this is not what we would traditionally see, given the situational spot for both of these teams. North Texas, off of that very improbable win over UTSA, where Mason Fine took a beating in that game. Florida Atlantic, off of a bye, with a first-year head coach, with a lot of talent, with an offensive coordinator like Kendall Briles. You would generally expect money to come in on the Owls in a spot like this because this situation really does favor them. But I guess it speaks to how much respect there is for the Mean Green out there.
Yeah, and I was kind of blown away a little bit by that opening line. I guess, you know, I mean, FAU's been pretty impressive, but I really thought that North Texas' game last week earned them tons of respect, not only, you know, in the Conference USA blog sphere where a lot of people are now taking North Texas serious, but you're looking at the respect that Vegas is giving and how good offensively, you know, in terms of the rush game FAU's been. So I was kind of blown away with not only Mason Fine being able to go 98 yards with no timeouts in a minute 27, but to see how that carried over to this week in this huge, huge matchup. And, you know, that's really, I think you're looking at a very confident North Texas team, and I think that confidence sometimes, you know, looking at lines, maybe even going into college basketball season a little bit to see how Vegas kind of handicaps this thing. You know, I think confidence is kind of a big deal when you're looking at these type of games, and I think that is really the reason why North Texas got a lot of respect in this one. It is because of the confidence, and you're playing with, you know, possibly one of the best quarterbacks in Conference USA this particular year in Mason Fine, and he proved that last week. So I think confidence goes a big way for this line. And I mean, you have two surprising teams in Conference USA going at it. Who would have thought that this game would mean anything in terms of conference championship implications? And this game definitely has it. And that's going to be one that's going to just be so much fireworks in this game coming up Saturday night. I believe it's Saturday night in Boca Raton.
Now, let me ask you this. We talked about Seth Littrell last year, I should say, and about that hire for North Texas. And, of course, they go to a bowl game. Now, they did it with a 5-7 record. They got in with their APR scores, but they got to go to a bowl. Most importantly for them, they got those extra 15 – well, those it wasn't 15 practices because they played fairly early, but they got some of those extra practices there. Then those are always important for a first-year head coach. Now, coming off of a road win at Southern Miss, which was a very impressive win in and of itself, and we'll talk about the Golden Eagles here in a few minutes, coming off that road win, coming back home, finding a way to beat UTSA, a team that made a bowl game last year as well, now you go to this game. And the question that I have with North Texas at this point is, how much has their depth been built up under the two recruiting classes for Littrell? Because that's the concern that I would have for them here going out on the road again to Boca Raton is, you know, do they have the depth to match up?
Offensively, I think they certainly do. Defensively, that is where the question is gonna lie. You know, that's really kind of the big question for North Texas coming into the season. And offensively, they've proved it, that they're able to have a guy like Jeffrey Wilson. You're looking at Jalen Guyton and the handful of receivers that have really came up and just done just straight-up damage. I mean, there's no other way to put that. But defensively, how can this team hang against a team like Florida Atlantic that's going to want to control the clock, that's going to want to keep that football in their own hands? And you know Lane Kiffin, it really what it came down to, FAU's become a very one-dimensional football team in terms of the rush game. So can North Texas being able – can their front seven really hang with the talented duo of running backs and Buddy Howell and Devin Singletary? And that's really going to be my question is defensively, where will that depth come from? We're looking at their linebackers. North Texas has traditionally had pretty decent linebackers over the next couple of the past couple seasons. But on the defensive line is where they've been really, really thin. And going back to last year when UTEP ran for over 400 on them, UTSA also had some big rushing games on them last year in the past couple of years. So defensively, more than anything, offensively, I think they're going to be just fine. I think this is a team that can put up points with anybody in Conference USA. But can they slow down? Can they have the depth in their front seven to slow down FAU? That is really, when we're looking at depth, I think that is a bigger question for North Texas in terms of can they hang a fourth quarter, hang with a fourth quarter against two really good running backs, a very physical offensive line and a physical running attack. That is going to be my question, and that's going to be something that we'll find out definitely after this week about how deep that North Texas front seven is and can they hang against the other rushing teams here in Conference USA.
So what do you think, Alex? I mean, can they hang? Is this a spot where you would take Florida Atlantic minus the 3.5? You think they put this game away in the second half? Or can North Texas, you know, come up with another really huge effort and maybe, you know, even win this game outright?
I think with a guy like Mason Fine, I put North Texas in every game. I think North Texas should be in this game. This is going to be a very close game. Could be a high-scoring game, but particularly if North Texas struggles stopping the run and Florida Atlantic able to get some of those chunk plays in the run game, I think that is going to actually play into North Texas' favor. Now, if Florida Atlantic's able to kind of lull them to sleep and go on 9, 12, 11-play drives, that could really – you might want to look at the under at that point, you know, if that's kind of what your feeling is on this game. But I think this kind of will go back and forth because, you know, you're looking at North Texas' defense with so many kind of – a lot of inexperience in that front seven. I mean, really their most experienced player at this point is Keyshawn McClain is their safety, and he's leading them in tackles, also has three run stuff. So that's going to be a big key. I'm looking at also Roderick Young, you know, another defensive lineman that has five run stops. So if those guys can really, really shut down that FAU run game, it could go in North Texas' favor in terms of controlling the game with Jeffrey Wilson and Mason Fine, but I just don't see that happening. I see this game going back and forth, and I see it being another classic game. And, you know, until he proves me further, Mason Fine right now, he just has that it factor. He's a winner. And I think that is going to go a long way until basically whoever has the ball last, whether it's North Texas controlling the football or FAU controlling the football, trying to kill the clock, or North Texas trying to come back, you know, down two or three score or down two or three points. I don't think you'll see this game get out of control either way. This will be a very, very close game, and whoever has the ball last and whoever can turn down those key turnovers down the stretch, I think will win this game. And I actually like North Texas on the road. I think they grew up last week. They've grown up the past couple of weeks. Like you mentioned, their win at Southern Miss, their win at home against UTSA. I think this team has grown up offensively, and no matter what situation they're going to be in, I think Mason Fine can help them win football games. And I'm going to take North Texas and what will be a slight upset to the odd makers, but I think in Conference USA land, that's what North Texas needs to do to prove that they're a championship contender, is win a game like this on the road.
I don't want to spend too much time on this game, game 337-338 between UAB and Charlotte, because a lot of the line value has already come out of it. It opened UAB minus 4, up to UAB minus 7.5 here. But I do want to touch on this, and I've touched on this a couple times here throughout the week, and I obviously want to talk to a Conference USA guy about it. UAB, to me, is the best story in college football this year, and it's not even close.
I agree. I mean, Bill Clark is a magician. I mean, not only for what Bill Clark has done in the first, you know, six games this year, but what Bill Clark's done over the past couple of years while they haven't had a football team, and having these kids believe, having these kids get better. And not only that, but, you know, to see how well their quarterback play is, to see how well they're able to rush the football with Spencer Brown, the running back. I mean, it's almost surreal to see this, and you're correct. It is the best story in college football. And for me, it's not about, you know, the first half of the season. It's about what Bill Clark's done over the past couple of years without games, and how he's been able to keep this together and keeping guys believing, and now building an indoor facility. And it's really a tremendous story from, you know, you don't have to be a Conference USA guy, just in college football in general, of how special it is. And I mean, really, UAB, the only thing they got to worry about is somebody coming in and poaching Bill Clark. So, you know, it's a great, great story, and I'm happy for those guys. You know, UAB is one of the most respected fan bases in Conference USA, and, you know, to see them, you know, have the success that they're having, and, you know, that field goal block against Louisiana Tech a couple of weeks ago, that was magical. And that right there, it really makes it turn the football season into almost a Disney story of how great Bill Clark and UAB have been this year.
And what I love, Alex, is, you know, I know your ties are to UTEP. I know you follow the Miners closely, but I can hear you smiling as you're talking there about UTEP. And that's the biggest thing for me is, I mean, what a great story for these kids. And look, they've got 4 wins. They should beat Charlotte this week. Charlotte's winless on the year. They get Rice at home. They get UTEP at home. And we all know the situation with UTEP here so far. This team's got a very, very good shot at getting 6 wins, maybe even 7 wins, getting to a bowl game. And that would be absolutely awesome for them and for those kids that stuck it out, or those kids that have found a place to play, you know, because Bill Clark had pretty much a full roster to go out there and fill. So it's a really, really great story. One more game I want to touch on with you here, and then we'll talk a little bit about UTEP to wrap things up. Southern Miss takes on Louisiana Tech on the road. Louisiana Tech down to a 2.5-point favorite here through the key number of 3. So Southern Miss, the preferred side for the professionals out there, lines in my power rating week after week after week. Apparently, I just don't know how good this team is.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is their quarterback play. You know, they've had Quandre Griggs has been injured. Keon Howard, I mean, if he hasn't played UTEP, he's been very inconsistent. You know, and I think that is kind of where that hit and miss is because we've been so used to the past couple of years, you know, 4 years with Nick Mullins. We knew that you're getting 300 yards passing. You're going to get 120 from Ito Smith. Now this year you take away that explosive pass game. Now the pass catchers are still there. Your Allen Zay Staggers. You know, Robertson's another big play guy, but just quarterback play, inconsistency with quarterback play between Quadra Giggs and Keon Howard, that's really kind of been Southern Miss's quote-unquote downfall, even though they're still contending in Conference USA. But that's kind of where, you know, looking at it from a betting angle, it's kind of hard to bet on them. You're looking at last week, they were heavy favorites against UTEP. Heck, I even took the 23, you know, that Southern Miss was favored, and UTEP defense really showed out. And, you know, Southern Miss still was able to cover, I believe, that game. I don't have the score right in front of me, even though I should remember it. But, you know, that was – I'm looking at quarterback play. You know, that's kind of the difference of a Southern Miss team, being able to you know, have those big plays and being able to take a 14, 21-point game and being able to put back-to-back scores, and all of a sudden the score is 28-0, and you're in good position to cover. And that's really kind of been Southern Miss's downfall, just the lack of consistency at quarterback. And obviously that's going to happen after, you know, a four-year starter, and you're looking to replace them. And, you know, it's just kind of – I'm pretty sure it's disappointing for Southern Miss fans to have that in their passing game, but you still have one of the most exciting backs in Conference USA and one of Conference USA's best NFL draft prospects in Ito Smith. So this game, particularly on the road at Louisiana Tech, I really like Louisiana Tech at that 2.5 points. They've actually found something consistent at their quarterback. Is, you know, Jamar Smith is almost there on the cusp of becoming that star quarterback, and this could be a game that can kind of push him over that ledge if he has to, you know, come from behind, which I think this will be a very close game with Southern Miss going to Ito Smith a lot. They didn't go to Ito Smith too much against UTEP, even though he had 28 carries. He got most of those carries in the second half, but I would look for Southern Miss to really, really ride Mr. Ito Smith this week.
All right, well, let's talk UTEP to wrap things up here. And obviously, uh-oh. I mean, the situation with this program is kind of a mess. I mean, you know, they bring back Mike Price because they needed somebody to coach this team after Sean Cooler stepped down. They're 0-7. They played well the last 2 weeks. I mean, a close loss to Western Kentucky, and then the defense showed up last week against Southern Miss. But overall, the full body of work here for the Miners, just nothing to really get all that excited about. You know, but like I said, the last 2 weeks, some moral victories. They played a lot better, did a decent job against Army in that triple option. Is UTEP maybe a play-on team here the rest of the way, or is this a situation where, you know, maybe this is just kind of a peak and then we're going to get another valley?
You know, in terms of betting, I would look at games kind of like last week at Southern Miss. You know, they're 23.5-point dogs. You know, this team defensively is starting to figure it out. But you just don't know what you're going to get offensively from this UTEP team. They want to have an identity of running the football, but they've been held to under 30 yards total rushing for 4 games this year. You know, it's just so hit and miss with this UTEP team that games like that, games where you're thinking, oh, wow, that spread is just ridiculous. You know, UTEP is bad, but they can't be that bad. I would kind of go with my gut instinct on that one, and that's kind of, you know, what that Southern Miss game was, what that Western Kentucky game was, what the UTSA game could be next week as well. You know, that could be UTSA could be a 17-18-point favorite, but UTEP traditionally has played UTSA well at home. You know, little factors like that go into that, because I think if you're looking at the X's and O's, I mean, right now UTEP has no identity on either side of the ball to really break down or any positives. So, you know, the rest of the season, my advice would be kind of stay away from UTEP a little bit just because they're so unpredictable. There's nothing, you know, really set unless they're going to Middle Tennessee and Brett Stockstill is playing in Middle Tennessee, the 22-point favorite. Well, in that case, I would definitely lean with Middle Tennessee, but there's just so many questions with this UTEP team going forward. And, you know, Mike Price has brought a little bit of energy. Crazy to think of, as an offensive coach, Mike Price has been. He's really energized his defense as well as they played the last couple of weeks. But it's going to be real interesting to see now that Mike Price has 2 weeks, a bye week and a full week to prepare the UTSA, how hands-on he can be with the offense and maybe generate something. You know, UTEP has not scored a second-half touchdown in the past 4 games, I believe. Now that's 8 quarters where they haven't reached the end zone offensively in the second half, and that is a huge, huge problem, and that's why it's just so hard. This UTEP team offensively just a complete enigma, but, you know, there's no doubting of how bad this team really is, though, at this point.
Now, I don't know what kind of job this is for whoever's interested in taking it. I mean, it's in the state of Texas, so you're going to have a lot of good high school players to pick from. Are you hearing anything about, you know, who they're going to target? Is there anybody that you would prefer?
At this point, the craziest thing, the craziest kind of wrinkle to the situation is UTEP also in the middle of an athletic director search. So I've heard some names. You know, Graham Harrell's been a name that's been thrown around. Eric Morris, the offensive coordinator at Texas Tech, the name's been thrown around, but I don't buy into any of that until there's an athletic director hired. I don't know when UTEP's going to do that, but I've heard a lot of names. I mean, Mike Canales' name came up, the quarterback coach at Tennessee, and I'm thinking those names are probably from agents, you know, guys that are around them, because, I mean, right now, without an athletic director, it's really hard to kind of gauge where UTEP's going to go. Now, where I want them to go is somebody like a Graham Harrell, is somebody like an Eric Morris, somebody that can bring in an air raid system where, you know, it's great to recruit 3-star athletes, but you don't really need to recruit the cream of the crop for an air raid. You can get away, you know, with having, you know, 2-star guys that are under recruited that can fit a system. That's what UTEP needs. They need a unique system to come in here and really kind of shake things up. You know, this run, 2 tight end set, you know, 2-back system, you know, power scheme isn't going to do anything here at UTEP. You need somebody with a unique system. And my first guy that I would go after would be Graham Harrell. I mean, honestly, if I'm dreaming, I'm going after Sonny Cumbie, but let's be for real. Sonny Cumbie turned down a fresh $1 million from Texas last year. He's not coming to UTEP. So looking at a guy like Graham Harrell would be a perfect fit for UTEP. You know, he kind of grew up in West Texas in the sense, you know, playing at Texas Tech, and he's, you know, what he's done at North Texas, making him one of the best offenses probably in all Group of Five. That's something UTEP really, really desperately needs. They need some type of offensive scheme to help recruit to and to help put up points and to help, you know, kind of hide UTEP's tough recruiting profile that they have. And I think you bring in a guy like that with the unique system, that'll be well. But as of right now, anything official or concrete that I've been able to report on, I don't think so, because once UTEP has that athletic director in place, I think then you'll start seeing some movement on the UTEP job for sure.
So I imagine that's something that you're covering at length over there at Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. What else you got going on over there?
Yeah, it's kind of slow during the bye week this week. We have, you know, taking a little break this week after a tough 0-7 start. But we'll also have some college basketball stuff coming up this week. You know, college basketball just 9-10 days away from exhibitions getting started, so we'll be previewing that. We also have our Conference USA power rankings that were up there from our 18 voters that throw in their votes all week. And then I'm going to be doing a podcast later on this week, kind of breaking down Conference USA and giving a little Conference USA basketball. So a little bit of slow content this week because of the bye week, but next week we'll be right back at it with the UTSA UTEP preview and also basketball. Basketball's coming up, so we'll get your UTEP basketball fix, a little Conference USA basketball as well.
And you can follow Alex on Twitter at NicholasAlex915 and then at SBN Minor Rush is the UTEP blog. Alex, great to have you on the program again, man. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Really good stuff there from Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. Cheetah has an individual entry and a team entry. I've got the Bang the Book podcast entry. 17-13 now on the year, 15-5 over the last 4 weeks. So hopefully we can keep some of that momentum rolling here into week 7. Also on tomorrow's show, Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.